everyone. My name is Jacob Minig. I'm the host of the Behavioral Health Integration Podcast. Today will be residential treatment part two. And again, I just want to inform everyone of my long break. There's been a lot going on in my life, but not all bad things. I recently just got promoted to supervisor at my current job, and that was awesome. I was very excited to hear the news, and I was very happy that, again, I got the position. So that, again, brings me to new challenges in my life and in my work, and I'm very excited to get started with that. And some more additional great news. I recently became an uncle to my beautiful niece, Finley Minig. So that was amazing and awesome, and I cannot wait to meet her. I should be meeting her in a couple days. Well, yeah, a lot of great stuff happening in my life, so I'm very grateful of that. And that, again, is one of the reasons why I have not been as consistent as I wanted to be. But now that things are slowing down for me, I should be able to be more consistent with my episodes. So without further ado, let's get started. Now, a little recap from the previous episode on part one, residential treatments. I know I was getting more into the initial intake assessments, checking for drugs and alcohol in their bags, and so forth. Now I would like to get more into disciplinary reasons while they're in treatment, the differences between each residential treatment center, and I think I alluded to this in my last episode where not all treatment centers, again, are the same. You know, some residential centers are just larger with more faculty and staff, and they have more mental health services, medical centers, as in like medical doctors, nurses on staff, and so forth compared to others. Not saying that smaller ones are bad, it's just the lack of resources they possess. May not be the best for certain clients who, again, need additional resources from mental health and medical issues as well. Now, the first topic I want to get into is more situational based, right? So let's say you're a counselor and things are not going very well for you and the client at the treatment center you're in, right? So you have to make a good clinical decision on what to do with your client. Are you going to hang on to them a little bit longer, try to work it out? Are you going to discharge them? And then this is where legal issues come into hand. You know, do they have probation and etc.? Or will you transfer them to another treatment center? If so, will it be a similar treatment center to yours? Will it be a higher level care facility? This would be like one of the larger treatment centers that have more resources for them. So as a counselor, ideally that's what you would want to do, right? Is to view your client struggling and then send them to a higher care level facility. As we all think, like, hey, that makes a lot of sense, right? But we need to understand that it doesn't always work out that way. And when I say that, is the facility itself that you're transferring him or her to needs to be able to accept them or even want to accept them. And there's a lot of factors that come into play for us to make that happen. So for the most part, when you transfer a client over, the other facility, again, is going to want information on them. So they may ask for like an update treatment plan or a weekly treatment plan update, their comp assessment summary from before. And then once you transfer that over to their admissions department, they'll take a look at the client and see if they are appropriate for their facility. And again, I just have to say there is a lot of bias in our field when it comes to certain treatment centers even accepting clients. And I didn't really want to believe that when I first entered the field, but the more and more I'm in it, the more I'm realizing it. And I would just like to give an example of a situation I had with a client. Pretty basic, you know, he had a lot of behavior issues going at a treatment center, and
you think to yourself as a counselor, okay, well, let me send them to a higher level care facility. And in this particular situation, it was a very nice facility. And again, I'm never going to name names of a facility at all or people's names. But I just felt like this would be a great place for this client. They have a lot more mental health resources than we do. They're a lot larger. They have a lot more room for the client to grow emotionally. They had fancier equipment and so forth. Well, again, it doesn't always work out perfectly. So when I sent this client's paperwork in, the gentleman who's head of admission at this facility really didn't get back to me for another like 2 months after I sent the information in. And by that time, the client was already gone because this client was on probation. And there are other factors too that unfortunately made this client leave. But when this individual, head of admission, actually got back to me, he called me and left a voicemail stating that we got this individual's name and information, and ultimately we are not going to take this client. We feel that his behavioral health and mental health issues are too much for us, and that he needs more one-on-one time. He needs a facility that can give him a better client to staff ratio, which is just absolutely ridiculous. And another huge thing he said was, and we saw in the documentation that this client used drugs at a facility, and yet that stuff does happen at our facility, but it's after we accept the client and those clients will use at the facility. But we know now that this client has used at other treatment centers in their facilities, and we just don't want to take those types of clients. That's pretty much what he was saying. So what he's really trying to get at is, it's okay if the particular clients that we admit here use at our facility, but we don't want them if they have a history of using at other facilities. Complete and utter bullshit. You know, I swear to God, if I would have like actually got the phone call from this guy rather than the voicemail, I mean, I would have been professional, but I would have given him a piece of my mind in an assertive, professional, respectful manner. And that's the best way I could put it. But really, like, what are you really saying in that point? Again, what does this individual's language show? You know, we only want a certain type of client at our facility. Ones that we can manage more efficiently. Again, I don't know exactly what he was thinking, but that was utter bullshit. And excuse my language, but that's how I feel about it. Where, you know, you have clients like that who need a facility that has more of a mental health department. They have more licensed mental health therapists along with LADCs and a medical center. They have the knowledge to help someone with this type of medical and mental health issues, you know, or the disorder. But they're not willing to give him a shot because he may be too difficult of a client to handle and manage. That's what they're really saying. And it's just disgusting. You know, when people like my client really need the help and they have an opportunity to go to a facility that could help them the most, they get turned down because of their past mistakes. And just in my overall opinion, transferring another client to, let's say, another residential treatment center that does not have like a good amount of mental health therapists on their staff, it's really not doing anything, in my opinion. I do understand, though, that maybe sometimes, yes, just a change in environment or atmosphere can be beneficial for a client. Absolutely. But sometimes it's just not, you know? Certain clients adapt and learn in different situations and scenarios. And I feel like if you just transfer your client to a facility that is just like yours, you're really not doing anything. You're handing off a problem that you see to another facility just to get rid of this problem in their minds. And that is doing nothing to help the client at all. I feel it can also be taken as a client falling through the cracks in the system. Similar to like kids in high school, junior high, that don't do very well, but they get just passed along because the teachers don't want to deal with them again. You know, again, they're just falling through the cracks, not getting the help that they need. Where as a field, we need to open our minds and open the way we think on how we can mix up certain interventions, how we can apply different services, different groups, one-on-one sessions, and so forth. Just because I feel like our field in general has just been very stagnant over the years, and if we never try to change everything, we're never going to be better. We're going to be in the same place that we are right now. So to conclude this part of the episode, I'm just expressing that we as counselors, we need to put a good amount of effort when transferring our clients to, again, a higher level facility or another facility at our similar level when it comes to residential, and doing what's best for our client, not letting them go through the cracks, not just transferring them out right away because they have altercation with the staff or a client and we just boot them out right away. And in order to do that, you just send them right away to the next treatment center. We again need to put more effort on not giving up on a client right away. And if there's nothing that we could do to help that client where it's just getting too much, then okay, where are we going to transfer this client so they can be more successful in their mental health, their recovery, their probation, whatever the reason that they're at the facility. Now, the next part I want to get into is more flipping the switch, right? Let's say the client is not really having any behavior issues, or let's say they're not using on site, whatever the case may be, they personally just want to leave treatment. Well, this could cause a lot of different factors to happen or occur. They're just not getting along with staff, the clients, they don't like the groups, or maybe there's something going on at home. There's issues within the immediate family, their girlfriends, their boyfriends, and so forth. You know. And another thing to consider is, what is their main motivation for being in treatment in the first place? Is it their internal motivation keeping them in treatment? Do they refer themselves in? Are they doing it for their loved ones, family members? Or are they on probation? And if so, what type of probation or commitment are they on that is pretty much forcing them to be in treatment rather than jail? All those things need to be considered when dealing with a situation like this. So first, let's talk about the probation and commitment situation, because I feel like in our minds, it might be the easiest one to kind of collaborate with the client on or deal with. Well, again, you'd think so, you know, and I did this early in my career where it's just like, you know, okay, client wants to leave or go to a different treatment center, but I would let them know, like, okay, well, you know, you are on probation and your probation officer and other, you know, professional workers need to know about your situation and what's going on. So it will be pretty basic if the client were just like, well, hey, this is BS, I want to leave treatment, and you, the counselor, could be like, well, you are on probation and you may get into trouble with legal stuff, your probation officer, they might have a warrant on you, etc. You know, you let them know the possible consequences of that decision if they choose to make it. But again, you don't force them into any type of direction because you still want that client-centered approach, right? And another thing that really helped me in my career is just having awareness within myself, you know, telling myself, hey, this isn't you, this isn't your life, this is them. If they like the treatment center, don't like it, or don't like how things are being done or how you do it, that's fine. That's them, and it's not about you. So you kind of have to throw that ego out the door. Or that's what I had to work on anyways. Just because, like, you know, sometimes I tend to see things very black and white at times where it would be like, hey, like, I feel like I'm doing a good job as a counselor. It's not the facility's fault that you're doing good, bad, or whatever. So it's just like, how could you be making this decision right now? It doesn't make any sense. So again, learning to throw that ego out the door is gonna really help you in the long run in this field and working with clients that may appear difficult, you know. And another variable that counselors need to take into consideration is the actual probation officer themselves. You know, I have had all kinds of probation officers, or I've worked with all kinds of probation officers, where I would have some that were, again, very serious on behavior, UAs, where if there's just one positive UA, they're out of there. Where I've had some probation officers who more or less did not care if they used drugs. So sometimes it's hard for a counselor to get a beat on that, you know, but again, it's all about developing that relationship with other healthcare providers. And that is also why I really want to get a probation officer on my podcast relatively soon, just to, again, go over this kind of stuff, because it's very interesting, you know, how they do things. And it's only going to help me and other counselors in the long run when I do that. But getting back to the main point is that some probation officers might not care that they want to leave your treatment centers. I have had this one probation officer where it was very similar to the situation I was just talking about, where this facility wasn't really necessarily doing anything wrong. I wasn't doing anything wrong. It was just the client wanting to leave the situation or go somewhere else. And I would talk to the PO and they would just tell him, yeah, whatever, just let them go or whatever. At least, you know, he'll be out of your hair and he'd be less of a problem for you. Well, in my head, it's like it has nothing to do with him being less of a problem. I want to do what's best for the client. I don't think letting the client just leave treatment is the best idea in this situation right now, you know? And he just kind of acted like he was doing me a favor by, oh, you know, just, yeah, let him go, who cares, you know, let him do something else and we'll take care of it. So yeah, don't worry about it. So again, I didn't necessarily like that, but I also have to realize, you know, it's not up to me and it's not about me, it's about the client. And as a worker or as a counselor or anyone, you have to always do what's best for the client. You can give your feedback in situations and let them know what you think of it, but at the end of the day, they're going to do what they want to do. And the sooner you realize that, the sooner you're going to be a lot happier or stress-free to an extent, I could say, or a little bit less stressful. From that note, that's why I'm always a huge advocate for counselors to get consistent supervision, to do therapy themselves, to, again, figure out what are their personal triggers or internal issues that are hindering them from doing an adequate job working with clients, staff, and etc. So that is very important self-care, and I recommend that for everyone in the healthcare field. Now, getting back to probation, I've had the very concerned probation officers that I would communicate with on a regular basis. They would be very concerned and involved in the client's progress in treatment, which is really good, you know. And if the client were to, again, give me attitude or want to leave early, I would have some probation officers tell them, like on the phone or whatever, no, you're not leaving, and if you got a problem with what's going on, you can go back to jail. Now, again, I'm not saying that's the right way to handle certain situations, but it's, again, more of you need to do this treatment. I know the facility there, they're very good. Just try to attempt to put in the work. And we're not going to just keep transferring you around treatment centers. And that in itself is not just a residential thing, by the way. I've had that happen a lot with clients, especially when I was working in outpatient where everything was going fine at the facility, but then the client would just stop showing up for groups, their one-on-ones. So then I would inform the probation officer about this, and then the PO would tell me, oh, well, I guess he's going to a different treatment center and everything, and we'll try to make it work out there. But as a counselor, I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, okay, well, he He didn't really do any UAs for us. He could be using, I don't know, or she might be using, I don't know. So I'm just curious, how often do clients do that sometimes where, let's just say hypothetically, maybe they are using, but they may just inform their probation officer, hey, you know, it's not working out here, whatever. It's just not a good fit, even though it really is. They, again, may just be using. So their PO would let them go to a different treatment center. You know, this does happen, and I'm just curious, and this is a question I would ask a probation officer, is how many times is a client really allowed to do that before the probation officer is just like, no, 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 no. This is the third treatment center, let's say, in 5 months or whatever, right? You got to do this or, again, go back to jail. So I don't know. And that would be one of the main questions I would ask, again, a probation officer. So, I mean, maybe that would be a situation where the PO is like, no, you need a higher level of care, like intensive outpatient with lodging or, again, just residential too. Because residential has more, I guess, of a controlled environment where they live there. They have staff watching them. You know, yeah, they're allowed to go outside a good amount of times, like on breaks and stuff. But there's possibly more accountability and, again, more eyes on them and so forth. So that definitely plays a role. And then finally, you have the probation officer that doesn't talk to you at all. And I want to bring up this interesting scenario with this particular client. You know, I had him for a second time now. And that's just me personally. He's been to our facility and probably many other facilities multiple times. But again, I was familiar with this client and everything. It wasn't a horrible client by any means. But, you know, he had some significant mental health issues for sure. And the second time around, you know, like the staff was ready, you know, because he liked to pull a lot of interesting types of behaviors. And at the same time, we want to empathize with him, but hold him accountable for his actions, let's say. And this particular time in treatment was a little bit worse than the first time because, again, it appeared that he just tried to get away with a lot of different stuff, you know. So we were trying to hold him accountable to the best of our abilities, but then it appeared that he was tired of it or whatever. And he wanted out. He wanted a different treatment, right? And I wanted to keep working with him and try to make it work here. But at this point, he was just done with it, you know, done with the relationship and the staff and everything, right? Well, again, he had probation. And I did not yet talk to his probation officer at this point. But he took it upon himself to literally call another treatment center and told them, hey, you know, I want in. When can you get me admitted? When can we do this, right? So he actually scheduled the appointment himself and not letting his PO know right away. So then he tells me he's leaving, and I'm just thinking, well, does your probation officer know and whatnot? And he said no, but then he literally calls the probation officer in my office, right, and talks to her and explains to her the situation. And it's just funny because she didn't really care too much about the situation, just that her client, you know, doesn't want to be there anymore and that he's leaving. She didn't even want to talk to me or any other staff member, so she just gave him the thumbs up, so he was ready to go. And he explained to me that, you know, he set up the admission himself. So he was going to meet with the intake team at this other treatment center. So then he told me, I'm not going to sign an ROI. Again, that's release information for you to talk to this treatment center because they don't need it. I can just go straight there. And I was like, okay, you know, what could I really do? But, you know, just be there for him and if he ever need anything, just let me know. And that's what I said. And he was gone. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. I had some issues with that situation. More so that the PO didn't even want to talk to me or anyone to figure out, okay, what's going on? Why is the client actually having issues at this facility? and if there's anything we could do to work it out to better help the client. Yet, she just listened to the client and just said, okay, sure. And that was that, and I just wish there was more collaboration, you know, because I've always had a lot more collaboration than that working with probation officers, some more than others, but never just, boom, done, gives a thumbs up, and my client's gone. You know, so again, I had a lot of negative issues with that situation, which is pretty cool, because I got to learn from that situation, too. And as some of you know, I'm doing supervision to work towards my LPCC. So again, I have, you know, a licensed professional therapist, you know, working with me on stuff like this. And she really challenged me in that moment, just asking me, like, why? Again, why were you so upset? And I pretty much just told her, it's like, well, she didn't want to bring me into the situation. She didn't want to even talk to me. I felt like, you know, I didn't matter to her, or I wasn't viewed as important enough to talk to regarding the client. So then she made me realize, hey, that's more my stuff, my issues that I need to work through. And then in reality, she never said anything like that. Maybe she was just doing her job on how she knows how to do it. But it was nothing personal against me, and that's something I need to work on regarding my internal issues and stuff. So, yeah, it was a good learning experience. And again, that's one of those personal moments and issues where, for myself, I need to understand it's not about me, it's about the client and what they're going through. And that also goes with collaborating with licensed mental health professionals, lawyers, probation officers. Just because they say or maybe do certain things, it's not to slight me or slight another counselor. It's just how they are used to communicating and working. And it's funny, I learned this in one of my group didactics too. Let's say, you know, they say negative things to you. Again, this could be like a probation officer, lawyer, client, or whatnot. If you get offended, it's more on you, right? So it's more like you push your own buttons. So when others do things or say things that get a reaction out of you, it's not actually them pushing your buttons. It's you pushing your own buttons and you getting yourself upset and angry. And that you have the power not to do that. You have control over how you react to certain things. So I thought that was a very interesting moment. And yes, we did get a little off topic, but I felt like it was very important for counselors at all levels to know. So, well, everyone, that is going to do it for this episode. I just want to thank all my listeners for being there for me and supporting me. And like I said before, I will try to be more consistent with my episodes now, and to ultimately move forward to bring more great future episodes. And that should do it. So everyone, thanks again for being there for me. And I just want to inform all my listeners that the information that is said in my podcast is not to be taken as therapeutic advice on anything. If you find yourself struggling with mental health, emotional issues, addiction issues, please seek the care of a medical doctor or a licensed mental health and addiction professional.